Great to see you here today. From what I can tell on Facebook, I'm preaching to a larger audience that are at the beach. Set the camera. All you folks at the beach. Terrible people. Beach. Men, watch your eyes. Ladies, you know what you got to do. Go there today. Hey, I want to read to you a passage in Matthew chapter 7, verse 24 through 27. And then I want to talk to everybody, but maybe young people in particular. I don't know. Whoever it applies to, I guess that's who it's for. Jesus says here at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, "Therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him to a wise man who built his house upon the rock. And the rain descended, the floods came, the winds blew and beat on that house, and it did not fall, for it was founded on the rock. And now everyone who hears these sayings of mine and does not do them, he'll be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain descended, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it fell. And great was its fall." Amen. One of the shows I've been watching on Amazon lately is Disasters at Sea. And if you like that kind of thing, if you like sad stories where they all die in the end, that might be something you want to watch. But they don't all die in the end. Sometimes the boat surprise. But it's actually a really good series, and it's well done. But it's basically about large ships, large boats that get lost at sea and go under. And I think one of the points that you get from watching that series is that if you're building a big boat, the most important thing about it is not the paint job. The most important part about the big boat is that it can survive storms. And that's not necessarily true of small vessels that are mainly used inshore. I mean, there are bass boats, and there are maybe some pleasure cruisers that aren't necessarily built to survive big storms, because you don't imagine that they'll be out far enough where they get into significant storms. But if you're building a big boat, you got to make sure, among everything else, that it is storm-proof as much as is possible. Now, none of the boats can be storm-proof, and amazingly, I don't want to... Let the cat out of the bag, but a 1,000-foot-long boat can disappear in the sea and never be seen again. That's possible, but to the degree that it is possible, you want the boat to be storm-proof. And I think that's an analogy of my life and your life. I look at folks who have graduated recently, and maybe folks who have graduated in the last 4 or 5 years, and I think the analogy holds. In one way, you're like ships that are going out on unknown territory in unknown waters. It's like you're being cast out into life. And it's nice if you look good. It's nice if you go fast. It's nice if you have, you know, some extra things about you going. But above all else, if you're going out into the sea, and I think life is a sea, there's a lot of chaos in life, you better be storm-proof, because storms are coming. And I think that's the first point of what Jesus is getting at here. Jesus is saying, listen, storms come, and it's important that your life be built for the storms. Now notice again here, he says that storms are not things that are avoidable. In other words, the first thing he says here is that you're not smart enough to avoid all the storms. He says, wise men experience storms. The wise men build their houses. The foolish men build their houses, but they all get hit by storms. And so you and I aren't smart enough to avoid the difficulties and hardships of life. I was there at up in the mountains, Max Patch with the Waddells. And Ty Waddell married Chelsea Solomon. Now they're off to Colorado. We've had some people getting married here lately, I think. Hannah Melton got married. Snuck up on me, but Hannah got married. And then Ed and that bride of his, they tied the knot. Yeah, Angie. And so I'm up there, and there's a few of us, and the storm rolls in, and it doesn't help when the storm rolls in to look around and say, well, I'm smarter than most of these people. Maybe some are smarter than me, but the smart ones aren't going to get hit by this storm. No. When it rolls in, it doesn't matter how smart you think you are, you're getting hit by the storm. And again, life is that way. You're not smart enough to avoid all the difficulties in life. They come in. In fact, I think Jesus is saying here that all of us, if we live long enough, and even if we live short lives, we're going to experience enough in life that it will sink us and destroy us if we're not built for it. Not built for it. You know, it's maybe a rabbit trail that I'm chasing, but while I'm in the neighborhood, I won't get this close to it, maybe another day. All of us experience storms, but something that causes issues, particularly when you're younger, is that sometimes you experience the storms early and sometimes later. And so there are people that experience the brunt of life storms before they're 25 in a lot of ways. That can create a lot of issues in your life in regard to self-pity and envy. Because you think, I'm the only one facing storms. Well, you might be the only one facing storms now. But the sun will shine for you someday, and everybody who's living nice lives, they'll get hit maybe later in life. And you have to realize that. I remember when I was younger, I got into self-pitying and envy in ways that I should not have. And that if I was trying to advise myself now, if I could talk to that person, I would tell that person to embrace what they were going through. I was a kid. I was the youngest of five, and my dad was a pastor. And you all pay me great. The churches he pastored, they didn't pay him great. So five kids, I didn't have a lot of the advantages in life that I thought others had. And so other kids were thinking about what college they were going to go to, and they had a lot of options, and I'm sitting around trying to figure out what the cheapest college is to go to. And I had to buy my first car, and others were getting nice cars. There were kids who were making better grades than me, and I'm sitting around saying, yeah, you can make better grades. You're not working bagging groceries at Ingles till 9 o'clock at night, you know. And, you know, they had nice summer jobs because maybe their families own businesses, and I'm down there, you know, 10 cents off minimum wage. And, you know, those things can grind on you if you're younger. It's like, you know, my life is hard. This is terrible. If life is a race, I'm 10 steps behind all the other jokers, you know. And or sometimes it's not financial. Sometimes, you know, you look at your family and say, everybody else has a normal, nice, functional family, and my family's the middle of bloody chaosville. I feel like I'm handicapped, maybe not financially, but emotionally, I've took the brunt of the storm, and others are just swinging by, and they all have movie nights and date nights, and they vacation together, and basically the only thing we do together at our house is we fight, you know. And again, when you're younger, you look at that, it's like, I'm in a storm, this is hard for me, and all these other people are skating by, and it can create certain feelings in your spirit and your heart. I would say something to you if you're feeling that way. You need to embrace your storm. And actually, you might want to even thank God that it's coming early and not late. Now, here's the thinking, because If you're raised hard and maybe you're raised in the middle of chaos and you're raised without the advantages that others don't have, understand this. Those storms are learning times for you, and it would be better to learn early than late. If there are lessons to be learned in life, you are advantaged by actually getting them earlier rather than later in life. And again, I'm talking to you guys 25 years and younger that think you've got a raw deal in life. I like to read biographies of people, and I like to read broadly biography. I just find people's lives interesting. And I'm going to tell you something that you know, but it hadn't dawned on you maybe yet. In most realms of life, very few times do the juniors excel or equal the seniors. Now, think about that in terms of athletics. Nobody has a greater advantage to being a professional athlete than the child of a professional athlete. They have genetics, if genetics matter. They have the best training, and they generally have all that money can buy, whatever that might be. How many sons of professional athletes exceed the fathers? Peyton Manning was better than Archie. Barry Bonds was better than Bobby Bonds. Can you name anybody else in all the professional athletes? The fathers did not have the advantages of having a parent who was a professional athlete. The children did. But we can name on one hand in all the professional athletes where the child came up to where the parent was with all the advantages that you and I would think of as advantages. In the musical realm and in acting, it seems like every actor's got a kid who's trying to break into the business. And when you think about all the old great musicians like Sinatra and Dean Martin and Perry Como and some of those guys, Bing Crosby, they all had sons who thought they were singers. But almost completely across the board, the sons never achieved what the fathers did. Although they had all the advantages. They had the connections. They had name recognition. They had everything privilege can provide for them. But they never achieved what their parents achieved. And the reason is because there's a variety of reasons, but nothing causes you to be great any more than knowing that if you're not great, you won't eat. Nothing causes you to be extraordinary as a human being any more than knowing that if I'm not the best at what I do, I won't live in a nice house. I won't have nice things. Nobody will know my name if I'm not the very best at what I do. See, if your family owns the business, there's a part of you that knows someday you'll be managing the business whether or not you're good at what you do or not. You just got to stay alive. But if you don't have that privilege, you know you'll never own the business unless I'm the best at what I do. Now, some of you have great parents and you have privileges, but they understand that, so they're working very hard to make you work for everything you get. They're trying to parent you in such a way that you have the fire that maybe they had when it was do well or starve to death. They're trying to get that in you, and you think they're being mean, but they are actually watching out for your best interest. But again, what I'm saying to you is that, particularly if you're young, and I'm telling you graduates, again, I'm in the neighborhood, I'm going to move on to something else. But enjoy, and don't enjoy the hardness, but embrace it. Embrace it, because when God wants to make you really great, He brings you through that path. He took Joseph, who had a rich father and who would have had great advantages, and he put Joseph in a place where he didn't have any more, and he didn't have any more advantage than if he'd have been born the son of a slave. For 13 years, Joseph had nothing more than what a slave would have, but it created greatness in him. When he took Moses, and he wanted Moses to be the great leader of the people, Moses had 40 years in the palace. He took all his privileges away, and he put him on the backside of a desert without any advantage in life for 40 years. And Moses came out of the back into the desert with a lot more than he had when he went in. He was ready to take a people and to lead them at that point. When God wants to do something great, he sends the storm. He sends the disadvantages. I shouldn't say this, but I'm in the neighborhood. Been watching this Johnny Depp thing. Thrilled by Johnny Depp. And if you want to understand this guy in the news, there's a 30-minute clip on YouTube where he testified in that trial. And he talked about his upbringing. It's 30 minutes. And he was born in the backside of the lowest part of the town in East Tennessee. And there were like 6 or 7 kids. And his mother was violent. The mother would just come through and whack their back of their heads when they weren't looking. And the father was beat down. And one day he just didn't come home, and Johnny Depp asked him later why he didn't come home, and he said, I couldn't take it anymore. I couldn't live there anymore. And so this guy who has this fabulous personality that has made him lots of money and made him very famous, it's basically the personality that people love. It came up in that poverty-ridden, violent mother household where he had to be funny, he had to try to keep his mother happy, he had to act, he had to become a professional at reading people and reading situations to keep from getting knocked senseless. And all of that produces this man. Now, unfortunately, he grew up and he married his mother, so he should have gone to CR. And so if he'd have gone to CR early in life, he wouldn't have married his mother. He would have worked through step 4, and he'd have had a happy life right now, and he wouldn't be in the news like he is. But that's another story. But again, the storms come. Sometimes you're born in the middle of a storm. Sometimes you're bred in the middle of the situation. And I would just again tell you, don't enjoy it, but embrace it. Embrace it. Because everybody's got it. You'll get through your storm, and if you learn the lessons, listen, you might be a guy in high school, and it's like, you know, you're sitting around saying, the guy with the $80,000 truck gets all the girls. Well, yeah, half the girls in the high school will date an $80,000 truck. But the only way you're going to get a date is if you have a great personality. But you know what? Having a great personality will actually pay off for you in life. So embrace it. It's creating something. And it doesn't storm forever. By the time you get in your 30s, it'll start to change. You got to survive. You got to hold down. You got to survive. The sun does shine. You got to do that. Now, secondly, I'm back on track now. Not only can we not outsmart the storms, it doesn't matter how smart you are, the wise, the poor, the wise, the foolish, they get it. But we also can't stop or, with our strength, hold back the storms. And you say, well, that's really dumb for you to say. Yeah, but here's the thing. We're living in an age where people are trying to make life not hurt in any way. The progressive forces in America talk about equity, and what they mean is not, equal opportunity. They're talking about equal outcome. And we've been living in this progressive drive in the nation where, you know, we give out participation trophies because we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. And there are schools that don't give out grades because they don't want to make anybody feel bad about their performance. And then we're in this place where there's equity, 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 where we're trying to make a world where there aren't any storms, where there aren't the inequalities. And to me, it's like trying to make sure it rains in Arizona like it rains in Tennessee. I'm sorry, life is inequitable. Life is hard, and whatever government program we pass, we can't change the nature of life. It's life, man. I got a friend named Kenny Greenway. Stop me if you've heard this one. He illustrates this better than about anybody, but my mom doesn't like the illustration because she always says, preach like you have a doctorate. And this isn't like a doctorate illustration. But Kenny Greenway says, here's life. He said, I was in a restaurant with my wife. She's a nurse. A guy sitting near us was choking to death. She goes over and Heimlich's him, saves his life. He's coughing. He thanks her. We go back. We finish our meal. We pay. We leave. Saved his life. He said, a few weeks later, we were in the restaurant again, and I go back to the bathroom. Doggone it, I clog up the toilet. He said, I don't feel bad about that. And I go out, and the girl's at the counter, and I say, he said, I told a half-truth. I said, somebody's clogged up the toilet, and if you'll get me the plunger, I'll go fix it. So I'm back there, plunge the toilet, put the thing down, and go back out, sit down. And then I notice that she's talking to the manager, and they're pointing at me. He said, oh, this is going to be bad. This is going to be bad. And the manager comes over and says, you know, in all my years here, we have never had somebody care about this restaurant to the degree of plunging a toilet, and the meal's on us. He said, now my wife saved a life and didn't get anything, and I went back there and blew up the toilet and got my meal paid for. That's life. If you don't have enough money to pay at Aubrey's, you might try that to see if I can work a situation, see if I get a meal out of it. That's life. It is. Life is unequal. There's ups, there's downs. I mean, have you ever heard of a guy named Harrison Schmitt? That's what's wrong with the world. Harrison Schmitt, there's only 12 people who have ever walked on the moon, and the last one was Harrison Schmitt. And this is the 50th year anniversary. He walked on in 72. As Norm MacDonald might say, you wonder how Harrison Schmitt feels. One of only 12 men to walk on the moon, and everybody knows who Kylie Jenner is. They know who Justin Bieber is. They know who angry little Greta Thunberg is. But they don't know that I walked on the moon and I was the last one. What do you have to do to get famous in America? Well, that's life. It's life. That's the way the world works. And we're up, we're down. It's hard. It's easy. It's difficult. The sun shines sometimes. But we can't stop the storms. We can't stop the difficulties. We can't stop the inequity in the world. We can't make it hurt less. Listen. We don't always do well financially. Our relationships don't always go as we would like. Our bodies break down on us in the end. And if Jesus Christ doesn't come back, we're all going to die. And there's not a thing in the world we can do to stop any of it from happening. We can avoid some storms. And I'm not saying that there aren't some people who make it a lot worse than it is. Now, not going there. I mean, you can make your mess messier. But having said that, you can't avoid all the messes regardless of how hard you try. And so Jesus says, you can't outsmart it. You can't stop it, but you can survive it. And he says, if you build your house upon the rock, that's going to be the difference in the storms. If you're well built, some of you are well built, but you're not well built. So some of you aren't well built, but you are. Some of you are well built and well built. What Jesus is saying is, you got to be well built and well built. Got to build upon the rock. What time is it, by the way? What time is it? What time? I got a 20-minute conclusion and a 5-minute conclusion. What time is it? Well, you asked for it. I can't tell. It's 0:00. Okay. It's not 11 yet? Okay. I'll give you the 10-minute conclusion. Here's the thing. Jesus says, if you build on me and my teaching, you can survive the storm. You can't outsmart them. You can't stop them, but you can survive them. But the basis is if you build on me. I'm the rock. Everything else is going to be sinking sand. Now, when you look at this passage, you say, well, it doesn't make sense because who in the world would build on the sand? And I think there's a couple interpretations. One is that there would be places that were sort of sandy. The outsiders didn't know that that rains, when it rains came in August, it would wipe out those areas. And they would build in these areas that looked wonderful, not knowing that the rains were coming. I think others would say, no, what Jesus is talking about here is that in the Middle East, in the Near East, only the experts knew what was under the topsoil. And you have that in a place like Michigan. I was talking to a guy named Faye Johnson, and he grew up in Michigan, and he said, you know, in some places, even 5 miles off Lake Michigan, underneath the topsoil, it's sand. The locals know that, but folks move in, and they say, what a wonderful building site, and they build on something that, you know, a foot down is sand, and the houses don't make it because they don't know what's right under the topsoil, and the locals do. And I think that's maybe what Jesus is saying. He's saying, you build where you know there's rock under there, where you know there's something solid, because a lot of people build on things, but they don't know what's behind it, what's under it. And he says, but if you build on me, you'll be building on the rock and you'll survive. And that's a very basic point. If you want a life that survives the storms, you take the book and you do what the book says and say, I'm going to build my life on what Jesus says. It may not make a lot of sense to me. It may not be part of popular culture, but it's the book. And I just believe if I build on this book, if I take this at face value and build my life on it, then whatever comes into my life, when the storm passes, I'll still be standing. And you do that with something like your marriage. You take your marriage and you say, I know what Oprah said. I know what Dr. Oz said. We've got to quit beating on Dr. Oz since he's running the right primary. But I know what these people say. But I know what the book says. I know what the book says. And so we're going to do Ephesians chapter 5. I'm the husband. I'm going to love you like Christ loves the church. I'm going to give my life for you. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to nurture you. And the wife says, wow, if you're going to do that, I'm going to respect you. And I'm going to submit to you. And we're going to raise our children the way the book says we ought to raise them. And the book says we ought to, you know, have the Word of God dominant in our house. And we ought to hang it on the walls and put it on the post. And so we're just going to be the kind of family that goes by the book. And we just believe whatever happens in the culture, somehow we'll be the ones that are survived. If the divorce rate goes to 80%, somehow, man, if we'll do the book, if we'll both do the book. Now, if one does the book, that's not going to work. But if we'll both do the book and if we'll raise our children according to the book, regardless of what happens in the culture, we just believe that gives us all the best chance of surviving what happens between now and 20 years from now. Whatever storms come, We're going to build this family on the teachings of Jesus. I'm going to do it. You look at your professional life and you say, you know what, in my life, I'm just going to be a truth teller. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to show up and I'm going to work. And if I work for somebody, I'm going to do it like the book says. I'm going to work as if Jesus Christ was my boss, as unto the Lord. I'm going to work as though Jesus is right there because he is right there. I'm going to tithe my money and I'm going to give money to the poor. So I don't know what the stock market's going to do. I don't know what the real estate values are going to do. I don't know what might come into my life personally. But I just believe if I'll live it according to the book, that whatever happens, I've never seen the righteous begging for bread. And that's what I'm going to do. In my personal life, I'm going to forgive. I'm going to be a forgiving person because that's important. The book says I ought to be a forgiving person. And if I'm a forgiving person, I think whatever I face, that's going to be important to me in sustaining it and coming out of what I face. I'm going to do that. I'm going to work and I'm going to align my sexuality and my sexual desires to what the book says. That's important to me. I'm gonna do Matthew chapter 5. And I think this is what Jesus, you know, when you look at the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is summarizing it and he says, these teachings of mine, and a lot of people would say that the Beatitudes are really like the table of contents for what he's going to teach. So when he says, if you apply these teachings of mine, you'll be like a person building on a rock and the storms won't take them out. And so they say, go back to the Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor in spirit. So I'm going to do that. I'm not going to elevate my spirituality. I am poor in spirit. Nothing but the grace of God can save me. I don't have anything to offer him. What I have to offer is filthy rags. So I'm going to rely on the grace of God. That's what the book says I ought to do. And then it says, blessed are those who mourn. And I think mourning goes with the poor in spirit. I'm going to be concerned about my poverty. I'm going to live a life that values repentance. I'm not going to go around saying, well, I'm poor and there's nothing I can do about it. No, I am poor. I don't have a lot to offer God, but that concerns me, and I'm going to work to grow my spiritual wealth. It'll never be enough, but I'm going to work at that. It bothers me. I mourn about it. Blessed are the meek. I'm going to pursue meekness in my life. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. I need to have that in my life. Blessed are the merciful and the pure in heart and the peacemakers. Oh boy, that's a tough one right there. Blessed are the... That one snuck up on me. Got some work to do there. But I'm going to pursue that. I want to be pure in heart. I want to be a merciful person. Blessed are the persecuted for righteousness' sake. I'm willing to suffer for righteousness' sake. Not because I'm an idiot, but for righteousness' sake, I'm willing to suffer. Blessed are those when they revile you all kinds of evil, and rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. So again, I mean, I can't tell you all this in the book, but you're getting my point. If I'm going to survive the storms that I can't avoid, and that's the goal, I begin to take the book and say, I'm going to live like Jesus tells me to live. People may say that's a dumb idea, but I just believe that if I'll do that, whatever comes into my life, it will pass and I'll still be standing. My life will still be intact. I'm going to do that. Some of you are going through some storms tonight, today. It's night somewhere, isn't it? Today. And I just want to encourage you, if you've built your life on the teachings of Jesus, you ought not live with worry and anxiety if you've built it on Jesus. If he's the one who's most important to you, now listen, he's got to be the foundation. In other words, when I build on Jesus, I'm resting on him to the degree that if he doesn't tell the truth, I'm in deep trouble. I'm resting on him. Some people say, you know, I'm building on Jesus. You're not, he's not your foundation. He's your shutters and your windows. He's your furniture. You got to put all your weight on Jesus Christ and say, I'm being so radically obedient to your teachings that if you're wrong, I'm in deep trouble. I'm in a mess. When you do that, take the promise of Jesus, you will survive what you're in right now. You will. I like how Moses ends. He's talking to the children of Israel and he's preparing them for the future. And I just like these words, if I can find them here. Verse 26 and 27. He says, there is no one like the God of Jeruam who rides the heavens to help you and in his excellency upon the cloud. The eternal God is your refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. He will thrust out the enemy from before you and will say, destroy. I want you to know that if you've built upon Jesus today, there are everlasting arms underneath you. There's a rock. That's one way to say it. The other way is to say that God has his arms around you and you're not going to fall. I mean, it may feel like you're falling, and the storm gets rough, and there may be times of loss in your life, but you're not going to hit the pavement. Not going to hit the pavement. There are everlasting arms around you. There are. I've used it before. Stand with me. You'll encourage me to quit. There in the chapter before, there's that great scene where Moses says, as the eagle stirs up its nest, so God stirs us up. And the beauty of that picture is you got the eagle, you got the eaglets. There's no place safer and warmer and nicer for an eaglet than to be in the nest, because you got this big nest made of wood and twigs and maybe a piece of lumber here and there. But in it, the mother eagle puts all kinds of animal skin, squirrel, I don't know what else they can catch. But I'm thinking squirrel. So the little eaglets, they just snuggle up in the animal skins. And they got a wonderful life. And the mother looks at the eaglets and says, they will never learn how to fly as long as life is that comfortable for them. And so one day the mother comes in and she starts with her beak throwing all the animal skins out. And the nest gets really rough because these little eaglets are getting poked by twigs in their eaglet bums. And so they get up on the edge because it's really uncomfortable down there. They get up on the edge and maybe they start looking around for maybe a little more comfortable place. And the mother gets up there beside them and she acts like she's looking. And then all of a sudden she just with her wing knocks them out and down they go. And so they think they're going to hit the pavement, but then the mother goes in and she swoops in and she gets them. And just before they hit the pavement, she catches them and she brings them all the way back up and she puts them on the nest again. And the little eaglet says, wow, that was, mother's got a little nervous twitch going on with her arm there. That was, boy, that's a mistake she made. She almost killed me. And so it's looking over the edge of the nest again. And the mother does it again and knocks him back down. And down he goes and she swoops in, and she keeps doing this and she keeps doing this. And sooner or later, the eagle learns how to fly. And every time it thinks, though, it's going to hit the pavement, the mother swoops in and it catches it. And that's what God does. Sometimes the storm came from him. You say, life's got comfortable. He does tear up your nest. He does. If you're sitting around in a $500,000 house watching Jeopardy at 7:30 and Murder, She Wrote at 8 and Matlock at 9 and getting up in the morning and drinking $5 cups of coffee, you're tempting him to stir up your nest. So you're pretty comfortable where you are. And he might do that. He doesn't let you get too comfortable. But even as he's creating the storm in your life, you belong to him and you've built your life upon the teachings of His Son, you can be assured there are everlasting arms beneath you. There is a God that is not going to let you splat. It's going to save you. The storm is not going to destroy you. And again, some of you are there. And in faith, you got to believe that before this thing drives you crazy. Cast out anxiety. Cast worry out of your heart. Cast fear. There is a God who cares about you, who said that the storm won't touch you. There are everlasting arms beneath you. You're going to come through this thing to the glory of Jesus Christ. Father, we pray for those who stand here today.